Welcome back, all of us. I'd like to thank Retna Dharani for being here for this afternoon session. We were planning the programme in the exec and just thought it would be a good idea to have a kind of channel of communication between the college and the presidents. And the obvious way to do that was invite Retna Dharani to come and speak with us. I think in practice, we've all got so many hats that it's not quite the college meets the presidents. It's like order members meets order members. But nevertheless, Retna Dharani is chair of the college, and we are presidents of centres, part of the movement strand. So, you know, we can imagine hats on our heads as we dialogue. Originally, we invited Retna Dharani. We were kind of remembering last year's president's meeting. And there were some specific issues that came up about ordination of ex-offenders, for instance, consensus-based decision-making, and how do you go about that, things like that. So originally, we invited Retna Dharani to come and speak about current issues, you know, that she was, or the college were wrestling with. But she said, actually, she didn't really want to do that, because she said, thankfully, there weren't too many current issues. Good news. But then we thought we'd like to, you know, be good to have a dialogue anyway, so we just invited her to come along and speak just personally about whatever is going on. And one of my sort of role models for that was when I was a Mitra convener, long time back. I used to go to Panamoka. Padma Wajra was the overall Mitra convener, and he'd just come and speak to us about anything he wanted to talk about. But it was invariably fascinating and interesting and stimulating and fruitful. So I'm really happy we've got Retna Dharani speaking to us about whatever she wants to speak about. I've personally been a fan of her letters that she writes every month, you know, letter from the college to the order. I was just talking to her now, and it's surprisingly difficult, apparently, or time-consuming, to write the letters. I really appreciate you reading them. Anyway, she's going to speak, and then open it up, maybe even fairly quickly, to any kind of discussion, questions, you know, dialogue between us, and just see how it goes. Over to Retna Dharani. Thank you very much.
So I'm very aware that I'm not the only college member or current, even past college member in the room, so when we open up, we can probably include a lot more of you in the responses. It's interesting, it's very fresh in my mind from the study this morning that I don't represent, you know, I can't speak for the whole college. I certainly can't speak for the whole order. But I'll kick off with a few things. One is, I wanted to say well done to the exec. I don't know what it is about this meeting. It feels like you've got it, you've cracked it. It feels like it's got there. This is what I've really, really appreciated this meeting. And it feels like you've sorted it. It's been getting better over the years, and I just feel like this one's really, really, really got there. And then I was thinking, a bit like Lokabandhu said, probably the college, the public preceptors and the presidents are the people who wear their hats longest. Public preceptors, it takes you a while to become a public preceptor because you have to be ordained for 10 years to become a private preceptor, then ideally 5 years before you become a public preceptor. Blah, blah, blah. So although we try to keep edging the age of public preceptors down so that we get a college that continues to be building experience and not just losing experience as fast as it gets it, it does mean that we do, once a public preceptor, you tend to keep going as long as you can. And although we've discussed the tenure of presidents, I think there's a sense that most presidents do continue for as long as, you know, it's reasonable and works. So I guess these two meet, you know, the college and the president's meeting are where you get people who hold that responsibility for a long time. So there's a lot of maturity and there's new people coming in. So there's a... I think the meetings then are just part of a... It's funny, we're a very lived tradition. You know, we pass on our law in a rather informal way. It never gets totally summarised and put in a book form that you pass on. So meeting in these meetings, just... It can start... I imagine it starts to feel as a president, if you've been a president for a very long time, that you don't need to keep coming. You probably don't, but you do in terms of passing on to future generations. So, yeah, I'll just say that. Lokamanya was asking how far I am through my tenure. I'm halfway, slightly over. The end is in sight. The last 5 years have been really, really tough. And I think it's not just been me, it's been a lot of us who've been trying to negotiate really choppy waters. So we've had all the revelations, to the extent they were revelations, about Banti and issues arising out of some aspects of his sexual relationships. I remember there have been a few times where I thought this could be the end of the order, and it never has been. So I sort of feel maybe it's one of those things, what doesn't break you makes you emerge stronger or something. And I've been very aware of Kula Mitra and Paramartha both here, and both really contributing. And it just feels there's a, maybe having you two here, and it feels like there's been a resolution somehow in the order, being able to hold all aspects of our founder and emerging able to, in our own individual ways, to make sense of the fact that he wasn't 100% perfect and he's still our respected founder of our tradition. So I feel like we've negotiated not only revelations about, or wasn't even revelations to some of us, but actually negotiating implications of some of the past concerning Banti. And then his death, you know, it was enormous. I can still remember being in Sweden when I heard Banti had died, and it felt like, you know, nothing would ever be the same again. And then almost one of the most shocking things was coming back to Adistana and finding actually everything was carrying on. It was very positive. It was carrying on. It felt like it was such a tribute to Banti, really, that we were so well established that actually it was okay in one sense. And then there's enormous change, and maybe there always are, but there's enormous changes going on in our culture, you know, so probably those are some of the biggest things we're trying to, you know, we're still needing to work out in the college, are things involving things like safeguarding gender identity, views about equality and things like that. So I think there's stuff that's changing in the culture which is probably affecting all of us. And the order is needing to negotiate as a whole. It's not just the college. I just throw in another huge factor that I realise in the mix has been, I'm sure everyone's aware of this in the background, but I can't spell out how significant this is. The recent FCRA ruling in India. A large proportion of our order is in India, and they've just been dealt a huge blow by an increasingly Hindu nationalist government. It's becoming an increasingly fraught situation to be a Buddhist and be able to operate in the way we do in India. People's livelihoods are at stake, you know, their ability to practice might well be at stake. So, you know, the future of some of our centres might be at stake. So I just remind us all of that as well. So there have been some huge, huge things to work with, and they're not all finished. You know, it's not that I'm naively thinking, well, that's all done and dusted, but I do think hopefully we're emerging, hopefully in a way, maybe stronger, wiser, emerging in the present continuous tense or whatever it is. I think there's another, so one thread I would draw out, two threads, maybe particularly for me. One is the balance. I've certainly found that I've had, personally, I've realised that I've got a sort of bias towards... I would love to have a perfect teacher. It's quite an... You know, it's a felt sense. I would like a guarantee. I would like a sort of cast iron something. And it's not just being a parent. Bhante is not perfect, but I don't think any other Buddhist teacher probably is perfect. So the whole thing about what does it mean? Do we have enlightened teachers? Are they perfect? What does that mean? I think for me it's probably a leftover from Christianity, a view about perfection and what that means. Anyway, that's speaking personally. And I think actually one of the things about taking on responsibility in a way that's helpful, I was reflecting recently that as you take on responsibility, which we do, you're increasingly aware each time that you're not perfect. You know, it always feels like you absolutely know you are not totally suited or totally perfect in terms of the responsibility you're taking on. And I think that does help with the understanding it. And I came across something recently of Bhante's where he was saying it was in the Vimalakirti, and he was talking about it's not in terms of exemplification and the Sangravastus, and he's saying it's not that you're trying to exemplify perfection, but you're trying to exemplify process. And I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's the message he's always given us, and I think I feel something of my confidence in that has, so it feels like it's dropped away as a koan for me. It feels like it's resolved somewhere. More prosaically, I think the whole thing about, I think possibly my personal bias is towards criticism rather than appreciation. And so in a way, I think I'm quite, but Subhuti says that I'm a commando, not a commander. I never forget that. So I think I'm really good in emergency. You know, I'm really, really good in emergency. But I think the challenge for me is probably more in terms of, well, when things are easier, then, you know, the whole more constructive aspect of things. And I feel like something for me at the moment is learning to change mode. Maybe there are continuing to be a few problems, but mostly it does feel now as though I need to reset and learn, recalibrate a bit and enjoy the more positive, creative, constructive aspects of our order. I was doing something recently with the Tiratnaloka team, and we were looking at a particular sutta from the Digha Nikaya, and it's been a bit of a theme for me. I did do a talk on a women's precept thing about giving and receiving feedback recently, which I think some people have found useful. So that's a bit of a theme for me. And again, talking to the Tiratnaloka team and doing some study with them, I was, again, a similar topic was coming up in this sutta where the Buddha was describing, basically, the Nagantas are all falling out with each other and stabbing each other with worldly daggers or whatever it is, wordy daggers. And it's fascinating. Really, it's lovely when you read bits from the Pali Canon about what the monks were saying to each other in bad ways. It's so reminiscent of the kind of stuff we've had recently online sometimes, and the worst bits of online communication. And the Buddha's saying, well, if you feel someone has either got the meaning or the expression of something, they haven't got it right, then the way to respond is not to refute them. I need to learn this. Not to refute them, but to say, well, you could put it that way, or you could put it this way. Which do you think is better, kind of thing? And I think I think that's something which we could still, all of us, learn a lot more in the... I think we could... when I was talking to the Tiratnaloka team, I was really feeling quite strongly in touch with the tragedy, the suffering that's caused in the world by misunderstandings, bad communication, just so aware of Ukraine at the moment. And I was very aware that with things like MVC, they apply domestically, but they also apply to world situations. And there's something about learning, it's what we do in the bodhicitta practice, learning to understand other people and how to respond well to other people. It's just, it's so obvious and so hard to do. And that's what we need, you know, if we could, we do need to get, it'd be great to be able to exemplify that. So if we can't do that, if we can't exemplify that ourselves, we're not going to be able to be a force for good in the world. So I do really feel quite passionate about that, that I'd love to keep working on that. Harmony, you know, it's essentially creating a harmonious, we are pretty harmonious, but you know, we could still improve. So finally, the only other thing I really wanted to say was to mention that I've had a plan that's been emerging for a while, which I'd like to throw out here, which is I started to become, well, one of the things was in the college we were talking about having more retreat time at some point. We were thinking it'd be nice to have more retreat time as a college together. And I remember years ago, I think it was Ratnagosha, just said, well, why don't we run a retreat rather than sitting around having a meeting sometime? We never got around to it. But I did remember that when Adisthana first opened, I don't know whether you'll remember, but we'd scheduled the first event to be an ECA meeting. I thought, that'll be good, that's about the right size. It was about 50 or 60 people. Not all the bedrooms were painted. It would test the facilities, but they'd be a forgiving audience. And at the last minute, the ECA came up with this plan to invite the college, the presidents, the mitra conveners, everybody. So there was suddenly 120 people on site for an event. So I was famously painting bedrooms at 3 o'clock in the morning or something, as one does with Trivatna projects. And anyway, it was a wonderful occasion. So the first event here 9 years ago now was a sort of, we didn't think of it like that then, but it was a kind of three strands meeting, and it was great, and people hung out in the courtyard, and it suddenly felt like, yeah, Adisthana is going to work. It just really felt like it, we knew immediately that it was working, and we hadn't known, it had just been a theory, and it had been a, projects like that start off in theory, you know, there was Majjhima Loka, but on the back of that there was this push to have, first of all, a library, a memorial library, and there were mixed responses to the idea of a memorial library. And then there was the project which became the land project, and there was a kind of mixed response towards the land project. And gradually it sort of turned into something that would be a library, study facilities, men's and women's communities in the country. And then we weren't sure about this place, and then it just felt like it was blessed from the moment. And then when Bhante announced the name, it was a very closely guarded secret, and I think I was still here, and there was an order convention in India, and it was announced by video link or something. Bhante said the meaning of Adisthana and talked about, well, actually I've got it here, he talked about, I think it has relevance of what we're studying. So from the literal meaning of position, this word is applied specifically to authoritative position and then to the power pertaining to such a position. It can therefore mean the power which belongs naturally to divine forms and in this sense comes near to the Christian conception of grace. It can also refer to the power which is experienced spontaneously in meditation or achieved through the recitation of mantras. In that it may be transmitted by a man of sanctity to his disciples, it may also be translated as blessing. Abhishekha is essentially a ritual empowerment. Adhisthana refers to innate or spontaneous power, and always with a connotation of active expression in the sense of grace or blessing, however, it becomes a form of empowerment. So I was just, I suppose I was just connecting. So a while ago I was thinking, okay, the college, maybe a renewed sense of our lineage, something connecting with inspiration, something connected with blessings, with Adhisthana. And I just started to think, Subhuti's been talking a little bit about what he's referred to as Vajrakula, almost a sort of esoteric core of committed practitioners who are probably with each other for lifetimes. And I just thought, well, what about marking Adhisthana's 10th anniversary with a revisiting of that kind of coming together, almost like the core or heart, and then opening it up to everyone else. So I just wanted to mention that here and say that it sounds as though there are college members up for this. I'm going to start throwing it out to... I'm going to talk more with Adhisthana about it, but it looks like it's possible. We could have a marquee up. There's a plan for a young people's event. So I think there could be a whole sequence of events, but I think it could be that the first one after the ECA meeting is actually a 10th anniversary Adhisthana three strands kind of celebration, something. So I'll just throw that into the mix as well now and see what anything you'd like to talk about or ask any of us, because there's quite a few of us here.
Well, when would that be? Because you're much more aware of the 10th anniversary than I am.
Okay, it would be the 30th of June to the 7th of July. Yeah.
Next year.
Next year. Yeah. Next year would be the 10th anniversary.
So, can you say that again?
30th of June to the 7th of July. Else from the college wants to add anything, just for kick off. Padmashree, you still can't. Padmashree is retired, but
I wanted to say that I've really enjoyed this meeting, almost more than the college meeting.
You're not supposed to say that.
both have got great maturity and solidity, and this has been sort of softer, the word I've got in my mind. Mm. It's also sort of, I don't know. We seem slightly more. Our personalities aren't so strong.
Beautiful.
What?
Careful.
Apparently it is a bit small. This meeting is a bit small, but it's just about kind of normal.
We know what you mean.
I've enjoyed the normality of this meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Comment on that, because I feel a bit similar. At the same time, I also know, the college meetings, you have so many issues to look at and address, which in a way we have... I think what's really worked for me in this is that we come to principles quite easily, and then in the small groupings, and we don't have to fix things and come to conclusions. And sometimes in a college meeting, you've got agendas which are very full. So, putting both sides of that, the college has some tricky stuff to it.
That's interesting, because
I do feel very similar to you.
I have wondered if we can reduce the amount of business type stuff.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because it has been a lovely atmosphere here. Yeah.
see something about history that can... I think the overlap of the college and the present experience is a really important one. And I can't remember how many people were involved back in the early 2000s, but to begin with, that there was this sort of body called the Peace...
Council.
Preceptor and President's meeting, something like that, EPC. I can't remember what the acronym stood for. But it was all of the presidents and all of the public preceptors met at Addis Ababa and had an overlap between the two meetings. Mm. And at that point, they hadn't almost really kind of crystallised themselves out into two fully separate bodies. Mm. But at one point, when Bante formally handed over the headship, the president's meeting decided to vote itself out of existence, which I thought was a really weird decision at the time. And it was quite a while later that Vajragupta and others kind of decided there was a need that wasn't being met, resurrected the meeting and started to get something moving again. It seems to me that the college and the presidents, that there's an overlap in the responsibilities that they have. I don't know how you would sum it up, but something like a kind of engagement with spiritual principle and a responsibility for the spiritual sort of vitality or something like that. I mean, filling it your own definition. But I think, to me, what's really significant about it is that in an organisation where there's a lot of emphasis on autonomy and the autonomy of individual centres, I think that the president's meeting and the preceptors' meetings are two of the areas where that there's a concern for unity. And it's not that other bodies don't have that, but I think that unity on the most fundamental kind of ground a spiritual principle. And I think that there's something about the creation of coincidence of wills that you only get when you meet. I don't need more meetings in my life, but actually I think it's important to come to this meeting because I think it's one of the areas where the preoccupations of your local centres and what your local centres are dealing with come into relationship with a body that's got an overview and that's got a concern with unifying principle but rather than the pragmatics of running a centre. And something about both the president's meeting and creating that kind of coincidence of wills, but also that the overlap. It's almost like the college, the president's meetings where the kind of principles that the college are dealing with meet the movement and sort of meet at individual centres. So the president's meeting for me is a really important kind of bridge between the sort of work that the college does and the work that the movement does and the kind of issues that the chairs do. And I think, to me, the value of meeting together, and even just the sort of study that we've been doing on this, the kind of convergence of understanding that you get out of that kind of dialogue, is a really valuable contribution to the kind of the goal, the kind of unification of a kind of broader culture and movement. I think it's a very important meeting, and I think the overlap with the college is a very important framework. Anyway, it was more just sort of thinking back to a time where there was a much more explicit overlap between the president's meeting and the college. I know this is something you've been talking about, been kind of wondering about that and that kind of overlap. You've referred back in my hearing to those sort of...
I don't know, I'm trying to remember, because there was the PCC, it wasn't just the, originally it wasn't just the...
It's a college council.
It was the college council, which included lots of different office bearers. Yeah. It wasn't just presidents as far as I know, but anyway.
Okay, I think it was.
I can't remember. I wasn't the president yet, so.
Can I ask some questions? But first,
please,
I'll say, it sounds like, to me, for me personally, it sounds like a really good idea. I mean, obviously I know a lot of people who are in the college as well, mm-hmm. and it would be great to mix with them, and I don't really mm-hmm. get much opportunity to do that. But mm-hmm. can you lay out exactly, you know, there'd be lots of people, but are we talking about maintaining within that a president's meeting, a bit like when there's several retreats running at Addis Ababa at the same time?
No, at the moment I'm just talking about a one-off 10th anniversary.
No, but on that occasion?
On that occasion, no, I'm imagining we'd all be together and it would be extra on top of what we all do.
Okay.
But we'd all be together. And I'm starting to think of a lineup of people who I think could hold it, run it, sort of take on to lead it from all strands. Just talking it through with the Castagioti a little bit earlier. It's still embryonic. It would be extra. I think that's why I wanted to test it out a bit, because it would mean enough people. People wouldn't have to come. But I'd like to get a sense of whether it sounds exciting enough that enough people would come that would make it worth. That people think, oh, that could be great. I think it could be myself, and it feels significant to me. I think longer term, it might be worth actually. One of the things that used to happen was at Majjhima Loka, there was this at-home month, so-called, which wasn't at home for everybody, but you'd have a month twice a year where all the meetings took place, and everyone who was in a meeting was there for those 2 months and could attend different meetings. It meant there was a lot of crossover. I'd suspect that's not totally viable, but I think it might be worth thinking. It might be something that might come out of something like the suggested thing for next summer, looking at, well, there is something. There's the college often feel also a lot of connect. I mean, obviously, we have a very strong connection with preceptors, so we work very closely with the private preceptors. So there's a strong rapport there. I think there's a lot of overlap of personnel and a lot of overlap of perspective with the president's meeting. I think there could be, you know, in a way, we've got the ECA, we've been sort of trying to achieve a sort of international aspect to the movement, which in a way, I think the presidents hold almost more than the ECA. Well, the ECA doesn't hold that, so the presidents do actually have an international perspective. And I'd like to, it's one of the things I want to talk to the exec about tonight, is India. And the presidents in India, because they meet on their own. I think they really would benefit from joining up with this meeting massively. I think we could. I mean, it'd be interesting to think at Adistana. I have almost wondered whether there'd be the possibility of having a big event here every year or every. I think we're going to. Well, two things. One is I think we're going to need to look at the cost and detriment to the planet of flying. So I think it might well be that some of our meetings become, I hate to say it, but Zoom meetings some of the time, because you get everybody there. But then other times we really try to get everyone together, and it might be that there's an opportunity to get a lot of people together who do overlap, and who I think a lot of us, as you were saying, Dharma, something about it's not. We don't really want to be having business meetings primarily when we come together. If we're deeply in harmony, this is what you tend to find, is if you're deeply in harmony, the business almost takes care of itself. Business meetings shrink if you're in harmony. So if we had really strong retreat-like conditions together, I think probably the business would be a doddle. And it would probably, I think, joining up all those different responsibilities, there is a huge amount of overlap.
So for the one-off,
yeah,
which groups would you think would make that work?
I'm open to suggestions. I'm thinking the college. Probably, I'm aware that it's unlikely to be massively international, sadly, because I think it's. There's an ECA meeting leading up to it. When's there a convention next?
We
it is next year, but next not year. It's just a long weekend here.
Yeah. So I don't think we're likely to get... I don't think we could. It would even be fair to try and bill it. I think we'd have to acknowledge that it wouldn't be pitching itself, ideally, as a totally international thing. So I don't know whether we make it an area thing and other people are invited. But it could be college, it could be presidents, it could be preceptors, it could be chairs,
Mitra
conveners. I think that was the kind of lineup 9 years ago.
Order conveners.
And order conveners, yeah.
Big,
but we would have the option of a marquee. Yeah. I don't think every book would come, and it wouldn't be. I don't think it would be able to be fully international, unless we
primarily a retreat.
And primarily, pretty retreat-like, I think. I'm imagining talk study in the mix, but more of a retreat. Certainly not a business meeting. Anyone else going to come? Yes. Yes, good, great.
But I think it would need to firm up fairly soon, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Because for everybody to kind of book something in, you know, it's the kind of thing that time does suit me. But I would have to think, okay, well, I'll do this then, and then I'll do that then.
I mean, I'd like to work on it with Adesthana and with the International Order Conveners and others probably as well, but I think that would be the place to start. And then, yeah, you're right, I need to... I'm so used to having ideas and then other people doing things. It sort of gradually dawned on me that actually I need to do something to make it happen.
But you might not need to do a lot.
No.
You might need to just pick it up.
Yeah. It just needs stuffing. And it feels for me something about emerging from the period of Bounty's death and everything we've been through. It feels like it was so positive, that start, and it was so important having Bounty here, and it was so, the fact that he had his happiest year of his life here, and he was here while we were up and running, and we had his blessing, and we had him give us the name, and we've been through everything about him, and I just feels like it would be good to feels like something to celebrate, that we, not in a naive way but in a mature way.
I've got a question kind of following on from this idea of this event, because you went through presidents, preceptors, college members, and so on. There's a kind of another class of person emerging as we all get older, of people who've been there and done all that, and they've not got any hats left, and they're kind of happily retired, but still alive. We haven't got a label for them, but in a sense they've got the maximum experience, and well, there they are.
I mean, Akasachoti was asking me today, what about there's some obvious retired college members who it would be odd not to include. So I don't know what to do about, we'd have to think about size, and probably not everyone will come, but what's a reasonable, what does Adesthana feel like is a doable size, and how many can we extend it to, and what is it? And but for me, it would be. I mean, it's not like you can create the conditions for the Bodhicitta to arise, but you could have a go at it. It's not that. It's the kind of thing that I think Tree Ratna is good at, is coming together and practicing together and getting inspired together. And I think especially to do that with people who really have. I think taking on responsibility does involve a certain commitment, and I think sharing that and then opening that up to more and more people and the young people, I think could be a very beautiful thing to do, a meaningful thing to do.
Well,
I think I'm still a bit confused. Okay. So when you say open it up to more and more people and young people.
Well, we'll have a marquee up,
yeah.
And there is a plan for young people's thing, a big thing, later on in the summer. What time is it? When is it?
I think it might be over the back hall.
Yeah. So I think that's just a feeling of you start at one end and then you... The tent, I think it's a bit up to Adestana what else emerges, okay. But I think what I'd love to do would be to have an open day, invite people locally, you know, do the whole lot. My memory is when we had the opening, I was a bit out of it, but I remember we invited the locals for a tea party first, and then we had... I think the order members, and then we opened it up to everybody, and then we sort of did a sort of expanding.
Oh, so it's a sort of series of events over time.
Yeah.
I think there is another group of people who are people ordained by Bante who haven't ever had hats, and you know, some of them feel a little bit out of things because they never have. And I think there is mileage somewhere for something for them. I mean, I know they've held every couple of years or something. There's been ordained by Bante, but somehow not forgetting that.
Yeah.
Because I think some people feel that in that category.
Yeah.
Feel a bit outside of things. If you have that sequence of events.
Is that a fixed date for all the user scale?
That's the one that's been suggested. It follows on from the ECA.
All right. Because the young people's thing, do you have to be late or middle of August or late August?
Well, maybe the idea is for the marquee to stay up for a long time. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I see. Sounds as if it needs a little more thought about what the mix is and why. Because, you know, like what Pabashir is saying, then it might become a bit like a convention.
Yes.
You know. Is it more to do with the order as a whole, or is it more to do with people who've taken specific responsibilities, or is it more to do with people who actually have those responsibilities now? I just think they're all kind of possibilities, but it needs a bit more thought, because it'll be different what the feeling is depending on what choices are made.
Yeah. Yeah. As I say, it's still in its early early days.
One distinction might be that it's people who kind of work in a team, so it might not include private preceptors. So, for instance, if it was more over to the team type.
Yeah, I think it does need quite a bit of thought, actually.
I mean, one thing that strikes me is potentially you could do something like make the study groups have people from all those different kinds of things, so that you're definitely getting a mix between people who otherwise wouldn't meet, but who have similar concerns, responsibilities, you know,
intercommunities,
chairs, presidents, and so on from different places. That would be very interesting.
Mm.
Just kind of sharing on that level.
Yeah, I think that would be the aim, would be to have that core heart group practicing together and very much mixed up, joined up.
I mean, another way of thinking about it, just listening to people, is to bring in the idea of lineage, where you would have your elders who are fully retired, but there they all are, and your current office holders, and as many young people as you can squeeze in, and get a sense of kind of transmission, you know, going on.
Good. I'm thinking of numbers, but I like that. I, when someone says something about elders, I was thinking about it would be interesting to have the elders and the young people. I'm open to suggestions. Mm-hmm. I really don't know exactly how to pitch it. I think I was going with what happened 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 9 years ago, which will be 10 years ago, and thinking that did have a ring to it. I think it was a last-minute decision by the ECA, but it was a sort of happy, serendipitous... It seemed to work, it seemed to make sense, but it probably didn't include everybody.
You could also, because you've got the ECA working immediately before that, so you could reverse the order. So you could, after the ECA meeting, you could have the retreat-like event for people who are senior and responsible, as the old terminology was. But then you could end with more public events, like for the local people and an open day and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, which some people might stay for, but some people might go before those things.
Yeah. No, I'd assumed it would probably, you know, they might need a wee break, but you'd probably morph into a bigger retreat and then open it up in some way.
I've been really happy for there to be a small, you know, group really thinking about all these things.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it sounds like this, you know, the significant thing about journey is that you feel more free to think about things. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, you were saying that up until now you've been dealing with difficult things. But you feel like you get a bit of a breather now to be able to think more, or, you know, have more kind of ideas like this. What do you think has happened? Like, what do you think? Do you think we're going into another phase or something? Does that question make sense? Like, up until recently, it sounded like your job was very, very difficult, and also, you know, when you had the same thing with, like, college members in India, feeling like it's so difficult, you know, if you were taking sabbaticals and so on, and, you know, do you feel like there's been a sea change or something, or...?
Yeah, I mean, I do personally, but I can't tell how much that's...
Yeah.
My experience is often of talking to board members who say, oh, everything's going fine, you know. But there have been some of us really quite heavily involved and quite tricky.
Yeah.
Well, quite really emotive and hard issues.
Yeah.
And probably... It started for me at the beginning of 2017 when we started the Adistana cooler, and it's been heavy duty since then, probably through till last summer, by which time I thought I had PTSD of some kind. Because I literally got to a point where certain emails would drop into my inbox and I'd go into shock for a day. and I wasn't sure I could keep going. So that's passed, thank goodness. Quite robust. But when I think back, even last November, there were people in the November college meeting, my deputies were covering for me because I just didn't have the wherewithal to be up front, running things in the way I normally would. And I feel quite different now. So personally, I feel like something's moved on. So I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what your impression is. It just feels as though, for me, it's the kind of thing, you know, when I think back to 2017, there were some voices calling for an independent external inquiry. And personally, I really didn't want that to happen for two reasons. One was I felt it was quite sad if... I felt like we have to be responsible for our own, us. And if we can't, we need to give it our best shot to deal with things internally first. Okay, if we try and do what we can internally and then we still feel there's more to be done, maybe we have to call in outsiders. But I really felt there was something important that we tried to deal with our own internal stuff, personally. And... that was really key to me. Another thing was I read through quite a few independent external inquiries, and they're not as straightforward as you might think. I think there's a view that if it's independent and external, it's unbiased. It's not. And I have seen one. I have seen good things come out of them, but they were all the same things that we were putting into place and that we were capable of doing. And I've seen some really difficult things happen, like classically you get an independent external inquiry for worse stuff than we had to deal with, admittedly, but it would classically wipe out the board and get everyone to retire, get a new board appointed, which would be effectively a new college, and that would include people from outside the organisation and people who weren't Buddhists. And that is so not what Bhante set this order up to be. So my own feeling was, we have to do this. We have to do whatever we can to try and be able to deal with stuff ourselves. So it felt that, for me, that was what we were up against at that point. And So I feel we've done, you know, again, you know, things aren't 100%. I feel we've been slow, we've been painstaking, we've not been terribly efficient, we've been learning things as we go along. It's been quite muddled and quite slow, but at least it's honest and it's upfront, and it's the communication mostly has been good, and it's been, I think people have done their best, and I think actually it's been constructive. So I think we can be proud of it, actually. I think we can. I wanted us to be able to say, because I knew there were order members feeling they couldn't, you know, they were talking to people outside the order and feeling not proud of the order, or not able to sort of put their hand on the heart and say we'd done what we could or whatever. And I feel most people feel we can. I feel like we're fine. So, and as I say, I think there's a strength. I think we've always been willing to be open, but I think it's been slow and it's been painful, but I think it's been, it has, I think we need to be probably better at responding to things faster, because it's not always good when things are very slow. But anyway, so, sorry, where did that start? Yeah, so I do feel like it's almost like there's things that were preoccupying the ether and the online communication that just seems to have... It was interesting when the Adsthana Kula report came out, a whole load of discussion seemed to stop. It just went. It was almost like the absence of something that I think indicated we'd done our job. And I think there have been still... There's still stuff working its way through. People in relation to the college, there's been stuff for whatever reason, probably a mixture of reasons. I think there's been dialogue needed with college members, board members. My internal sense is that we've done our best in some quarters, and it's as though it's gone quiet again. And I don't know, to be honest, whether there's still more to come through or whether we've done our best. I don't. It's hard to tell. But we can only keep responding to what comes up. But it feels as though, yeah, I'd be interested to know your perspective, because you've got broad perspective, worldwide perspective, in terms of true Ratna, state of the nation, state of the order and movement.
Well, question for understanding, there has been or still is to a certain degree of tension between the college and the safeguarding team. How do you see that at the moment?
Yeah, I don't know if it was just it wasn't just the college and the safeguarding team. There was an ethics cooler which involved the order conveners and college members and safeguarding team, where most of the time we got on, but there was a fault line that just kept tripping us up. And in the end, the safeguarding team left overnight. And there has been a certain amount of follow-up with them, which finally ended up being less and less people that it was focused on, and finally the last person has been involved in a process of resolution, which I gather has gone very well. Also, I think the safeguarding team is now much more embedded in the ECA development team. The executive is definitely sort of their home. And also they've got a wider cooler. That there's actually got a few order members with safeguarding experience in the order. Mm-hmm. And they've formed a sort of broader cooler with sometimes a different perspective. And I think that's really helped create a larger container of people who have are equally, you know, experienced in safeguarding but might have different approaches. I think Subodasi has been a really important factor in the equation. So having someone funded to take on ethical work, particularly in the order, has been very, very helpful. I don't think it's completely sorted, the issue of safeguarding.
You had a new thought a couple of weeks ago about reframing it. You looked at it all from ethics rather than safeguarding. Do you remember?
Yes,
that?
I have. Yes, I have wondered whether the clash was. Sometimes my impression was that from a safeguarding point of view, it was seen as safeguarding needs to happen, and within that, you might have issues of order ethics left over that also have to be dealt with. Whereas my model had always been much more like you've got order ethics and some of those things might have a safeguarding element. So it was almost like a clash of perspectives. I completely understand that we, you know, it's not just that we have to do safeguarding now because of health and safety. It's desperately needed. You know, the history of almost every religious institution is littered with bodies in terms of ethical issues, and quite often they've been, you know, the classic, you know, this goes back decades, but classically you look at any religious institution, you get ethical issues, serious ethical issues happening and people being moved sideways, and that's what happens, and that's what, it's understandable. I think that's what people thought they were doing, it was the best they could do at the time kind of thing, but it's patently obviously not a solution, and it's left a residue. So I think there's been a backlog. I think there's been a backlog of there's been a change in perspective, which I think has gone slightly overboard the other way, to be honest, because that's how change tends to work. You know, it overcompensates. So I think there might have been a bit of a sense that we haven't dealt with everything as well as we could have done in the past. So we need to be over and above zealous about it now, which I think comes with its own problems. Sorry, is that... Did you want to draw me out to
just,
more?
I'm just interested in your perspective. My perspective. I'm involved in a kind of safeguarding cooler thing, so I'm a little interested in how it looks from your perspective.
I mean, I'm trying to keep out of it at the moment. Partly because I ordain Manisha and I don't want to jeopardise our connection, so I'm trying to keep out. But my sense is things will probably go in a more viable direction. I don't know whether, I might have said this before, I don't know whether, I think it's an open question at the moment whether we will manage to completely come up with a happy juxtaposition of safeguarding within Triratna and within our ethical framework, or whether, I think there's signs that the powers that be external to us are likely to start to, it might not be long before legislation means that safeguarding of religious groups has to be done externally. I think we're likely to be facing a situation like that, in which case it'll be out of our hands to some respects. So I think, again, the onus is on us to do as well as we can in terms of trying to understand the principles but sticking to our principles in terms of ethics. It's a tricky area. I mean, the whole thing about safeguarding, sometimes you hear it put that it's making sure bad things don't happen. I always say, well, you can't make sure bad things don't happen. They will happen. You can try and reduce the risk, but you can't. It's a bit like that British thing, isn't it, where you have a guardrail 10 feet from the cliff edge so that no one will fall over. But you can't actually see over, so you can't see the view. You know, it's like how extremely do you try to guard against?
How safe is your guarding?
Yes. How? Yeah. Can you anticipate every possible problem and stop it happening? But do you want, can you say any more, Adrianatha, about your sense of the question?
Well, I don't know if it's appropriate in this context. It's just the particular case that I'm involved with. I know the whole thing's just stuck. But it's not going to be
I mean, I think some areas of it have been very straightforward, and there, I think things like safeguarding at centres, where you have a centre policy, I think that, as far as I know, that's been pretty straightforward, good battery, hasn't it? It's not that area, I think, that's been problematic.
It's where the safeguarding centre comes into the orbit of the order. That's been the tricky bit. That's been separated out in terms of the responsibilities of the safeguarding team, and there's support, like you indicated. But then there's the order side bit. That I don't know how far that's been set up.
Yeah.
But that was a question.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to get my head around some of these things, because we're looking at the moment of the college needs to probably become a separate charity in its own right, in which case it will need safeguarding. Now, who from what? You know, I'm trying to think, so are we then responsible institutionally for if anyone does anything that any one of us ordained, does that then come back to us as their preceptors in the safeguarding capacity? I mean, you've probably got more experience of safeguarding than I have. I just can't sometimes get my head around where the responsibilities lie.
I don't think it's clearly delineated.
Yeah.
Being that it's quite relatively new concerns around religious organisations.
Yeah.
And then it's a bit the same with health and safety. Everybody thinks we don't know where we are, so you gold plate everything and you go to the nth degree. And then after 10 years you think, why did we do that? We didn't need to do that. But it's just that clarity isn't always there. It's been interesting watching other groups, hasn't it, over the last few years, Shambhala and Rigpa. I presume that's what you're talking about external people coming in. And I mean, I just can't imagine it in Sri Ratna, that sort of approach. It's disastrous, you know, just clear the board and go, okay, bring an external.
Yeah.
You know, there's no understanding of the culture. And I think we're just very different organisations. There's a different orientation, they're more Lamo-centric or something, aren't they? Whereas we've got a whole basis and relationship, and that makes the biggest, that gives us the biggest difference, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is we feel we're beyond a certain point that we could market next year as something very positive. Is that with this event?
That's a separate, yes, a separate.
I'm just coming back to that. I think it's quite exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, right. Get you signed up. Yeah. I mean, I would say as well, I think it's, as well as the Adesthana Kula work, I think the fact that we had safeguarding was extremely helpful. You know, it was, if we hadn't had that as well, I think it would have been worse. So I would like to say that as well. And other groups who didn't were then more vulnerable to external demolition. anything?
I'm just wondering, Johnny. You sometimes talk about having a development team in the college or something that, like the EC, Subhashmashi reminded me this morning. Have you got any thoughts about that? Like getting more people involved in the administration or anything? Was it just too difficult to sort of delegate? Like
no, that? I haven't really, personally. I mean, I work very closely with my deputies.
Yeah.
Do you want to say any more about that? I don't know.
I know some people in the college think it might be good to have just more to use to get some money and pay some people to do some of the legwork.
I'm not clear what. I haven't ever had a sense of what the legwork would be, so...
Maybe the principle is more like, it's lovely to see you engaged in more inspirational end of the work, like setting up an event and stuff like that.
I think that's less because of
the
load of admin. Yeah. I mean, pretty much Castiglione keeps up with me. So it's not so much over... I don't feel I've been overloaded in terms of work. It's more, I think we've been through a particular phase where there's been not only big things, but big exacting things to deal with. And sometimes, you know, I sit and think, what the hell am I going to do about this for a long time? Because it's so hard. But it's more that than... I mean, the college is very small. That's it's run. You know, it's there's only max 40 of us. I mean, it's as a strand, we're the tiniest strand. So sometimes it's hard to do things like come up with strand representatives on every area council because we, you know, like in America, you've got two people to choose from, and it's sort of it can be, we're short on the ground in some places in terms of, say, the international council work.
Yeah.
So we get called on. So, for example, in India, I think Amritdeep and Yashasaga have felt really, really overloaded, but that's mainly because they've been drawn into other areas of crisis and work.
They are superpowers, aren't they?
They've been really valued, but it's for them, for who they are, rather than another body.
I'm just thinking, as I speak, I'm thinking of what you said earlier. I mean, maybe it's more of a college discussion, but you said, you have this idea for, say, this big retreat to go back to that, and then you realise, if it's going to happen, I need to do something. But that's the sort of thing I could imagine other people could help with, you know. Or I just spent the afternoon writing emails to people about fundraising for a new Tirat Loka, which I'm fine to do, but it doesn't need me to be doing it. Do you know what I mean? Somebody else could like go scroll through this whole massive list or send this whole massive list of emails.
But that's a sort of not really a college thing, is it?
It's trying to get more people. It's trying to get a new retreat centre to get more people into it, isn't it?
Well, we could certainly look at hiring someone to be more involved.
That kind of,
did say we would do whatever we needed to, like future Dharma people and.
Yeah.
So we could certainly fund that elsewhere, but I'm not feeling personally like when I say I'm needing to take it on, it's not from it's not that there aren't people I can call on and I will be working as a team. It's not that I don't have that.
I really wasn't meaning that as a personal thing. I was just wondering if we as a college there would be ways of being even more effective. But I haven't, it's not a thought for a thing, you know. It wasn't like we were having a conversation.
No,
about
we just had a brief exchange or something.
Yeah.
No, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Next college chair might want to work differently, but I'm pretty okay at the moment. Yeah.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
Just picking up something, changing subject.
Mm.
Picking up something you mentioned just briefly in your talk, which was the Vajrakula.
Yes.
And I do remember Subbuti talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it must have been early in the pandemic. We had a Zoom Christmas meeting, and Subbuti gave a Zoom talk. Mm-hmm. I can't quite remember.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I've just been interested. It's obviously still floating around as an idea.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I might be completely wrong, it's a kind of inner core of absolute heart disciples. I don't know. But I just wonder what you think about it.
Yeah, I hesitated to throw it in, but I think when Subbuti has talked about it, there's been a very strong positive response from the people. It's what people have remembered from that talk. He's talked about it in a few different places. And I did think, I think it's an esoteric thing. So I don't think it's an exoteric thing. So I don't think you can say it's the college or it's this or it's that. You know, it's not like, it's not a hat thing, it's a heart thing, I think. So yes, I think of it as quite an internal thing, and there's probably degrees of, and it's changing. So I think that's why I hesitated to throw it in, but I think it is connected with the idea of lineage and Adhisthana, and essentially what we're trying to do, what we're doing, what our responsibility is in essence, I think, is that Vajrakula. Which, hearing Subbuti talk about it, was very striking. It was very resonant for people. So that's, for me, what that retreat would be about. Would be inviting. It's not an absolute thing. If you're not there, you're not part of Vajrakula. But I think it's just, yeah, something. Expressing it, encouraging it, giving it a home, calling it into being.
So the Vajrakula might be as broad as all the people we've kind of talked about, you know, college and preceptors and presidents and chairs and elders and whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think potentially it is, that's the thing. It's not in, I don't think any of us have got the prerogative on it. I think it is a more heart thing. And there'll be people who don't belong to any of those categories. So I don't want to. That's why I think I don't want to make it a Vajrakula retreat, because I think it would be a misnomer.
Mm. I think it also could be a bit divisive.
Yeah,
people could take it as rather divisive.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's something of the spirit of that, but not having ownership of it, as it were. Not that anyone could have ownership of Vajrakula.
Would you see it as, I don't know, we talked about lineage in this retreat, the four lineages. Mm. Would you see the Vajrakula as embodying one particular lineage? It wouldn't be responsibility, I guess. Inspiration?
Inspiration.
I think it would have to be responsibility, wouldn't it?
Inspiration. I think it's inspiration.
But then why would it not be open to absolutely everyone?
I think it's inspiration.
I think there are two different discussions. You know, one's about who comes to this retreat, and one is about the nature of an esoteric grouping with faith. I don't think we're trying to define who gets to come to the retreat in this discussion, are we?
No. That's not what you were asking, is it?
I'm just curious about the term.
The term.
I think I had a notion in my mind it was a really narrow thing, absolute heart disciples, you know, the core of the core of the core. But it sounds like you're using it in a broader way.
Well, I think it probably is, but then it's not a fixed thing, and it's not that you've got it or you haven't got it. There's probably a sliding scale. So, and hopefully more people. And I don't think it's even a thing that you would ever... No, I think it's like one of those things. But I think it's an interesting topic, because I would almost say, like, the fact that I feel a connection with every order member, that's one level of it. I think we feel, you know, do, don't you? You meet any old member you've never met before and you feel you've got something there. It's not just, yeah. And so that's it at its broadest level. And I think it's, but there is something, I think, at the heart. I think Subhuti's just been thinking a lot about, he's been doing a lot of practice and teaching on the Bardo Shadol, and I think his sense, I think he's been reflecting a lot on when he left the college, when he retired, he was very, very moved by the evening where we rejoiced in his merits in the college. And he, I remember him saying he felt totally convinced he would be reborn with us. Now, I don't think that was necessarily all of us, but it was like, but it was a, do you know what I mean? It was a, it doesn't even matter how many of us it is, but it's more like, I think there is that at the heart. There's something of a commitment to the order, Bhante, our lineage, which hopefully gets stronger and deeper and as we continue. And if we didn't have that heart, it would be... But I think it is the thing that's not any one... It's certainly not any one institution, I think, although hopefully it would be manifest to a large extent within, say, the presidents, the public preceptors. You'd hope that it would be there to a degree, because if it isn't, we're in trouble. It doesn't matter who's where you are, but I think it's something that we can share and rejoice in without it being a definitive thing.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay.